Track 6. Welcome to the weekly report from the Sports Desk, where so far as local news is concerned, we'd rather dwell on Stourbridge Football Club's progress to the third round of the FA Trophy competition than on their rugby counterpart's submission at home to Sale on Saturday. So let's start with the Glass Boys, who travelled over to St Neots for Saturday's second round clash in the Cup, where their strong tradition in Cup competition saw them through to a third round after victory by 3-2. All the goal scoring came after half time in this close fought contest, and it was the home side who struck first immediately after the break. That lead lasted precisely 2 minutes, however, before Leon Broadhurst equalised for the Glass Boys, who very shortly thereafter found themselves in the lead when Luke Benbow struck from the penalty spot. 3 goals in the first 7 minutes of the second half had everyone on their toes, and it was Glass Boys who struck next, but not until the final quarter hour. They looked comfortable with a 2-goal cushion, but St Neots were not finished and they scored again inside the last 5 minutes just to add an edge to the concluding action. However, Glass Boys' defence was equal to the task. Their reward is another away fixture in the third round of the competition when Stourbridge will travel to meet Bradford Park Avenue. Many years ago, and I do mean many, this Bradford club were in the Football League itself, back in Division 3 North in those far-off days, and I think I'm correct in saying that their ground at that time was just about the largest in English soccer, with a capacity of more than 100,000. I should think if more than 1,000 turn up in a couple of weeks to watch them play Stourbridge, that will be considered a good crowd. Nowadays, Park Avenue play in the National League North, which is a notch above Glass Boys' level, so it'll be a tough ask for our lads to make it through to round 4. Before then, Stourbridge will already have visited Yorkshire, as this Saturday sees them in league action against Shaw Lane, whose name gives nothing away about their whereabouts, but they're based in Barnsley, have been doing quite well in the league this season, but have just announced that their manager has resigned to join another club at a higher level. So this may be a good time to catch them, as they may be in some turmoil. But maybe my imagination is running away with me. Quite by coincidence, the same Shaw Lane were here last weekend when they played Halesowen Town in the league. That ended as a goalless draw, and I should think the Yelts would regard that as a pretty good outcome from their viewpoint down near the bottom of the league. Now, all this talk about soccer has enabled me to put off reporting on Stourbridge Rugby's match last Saturday when Sale, from up Manchester way, visited Stourton Park. This was the long-anticipated day when Stourbridge's new all-weather pitch was christened, but this opening fixture upon it will not have been fondly remembered by home supporters. It has to be said at the outset that Stourbridge were poor. Blighted still by injuries at key positions, even so their experienced players had a distinctly off day, and it says something that their man of the match was fullback Robbie Forbes, playing his very first match for the club. A particular weakness was the home side's line-out, which Sale ruthlessly exploited. Indeed, the visitors far exceeded the home side in all aspects of the game, and a casual spectator would have thought that they were the top-of-the-league team visiting some pretenders, not the other way round. After Forbes, that new young fullback, had opened Stourbridge's account with a well-taken try after 5 minutes, Sale pretty much ran the show, were quicker, stronger and far more direct, and thoroughly deserved their victory by 39-16, every bit as comprehensive as that scoreline suggests. Thanks to their run of 9 wins in 9 matches at the start of the season, each one accompanied by a bonus point for scoring 4 or more tries, Stourbridge still lead the league with a 2-point advantage over Hinckley. But after a break this coming weekend, when all the home nations are engaged in international matches and the leagues have a day off, they face potentially tough encounters against South Leicester, Hinckley and Tynedale, all among the chasing pack, and only one of these matches is at home. Talk of the forthcoming weekend's internationals prompts me to mention that the first series of games against the Southern Hemisphere teams last Saturday. The entertainment they provided was decidedly mixed. England stumbled to a stodgy win against Argentina, and coach Eddie Jones got a row from his mum. Not due to the performance as such, but he was unfortunate enough to be caught on television in his seat in front of the stand, effing and blinding at some mistake by the England team. According to the press, Ma Jones rang him up afterwards to disapprove. Scotland provided a comedy of errors in defeating Samoa in a match where the two sides competed to see who could commit the biggest howler. Wales was subdued in losing to Australia, and Ireland were by far the best of the home nations in dismissing South Africa, almost with contempt, by 38 points to 3. The fixtures this weekend include England versus the Aussies, Wales playing Georgia, very much a rising nation among the rugby fraternity, Ireland will face Fiji, and I'll hide behind the sofa when Scotland take on New Zealand. A week or two ago, here at the Sports Desk, we were congratulating Lewis Hamilton on securing the Formula One Drivers' Championship for 2017, but the season's not quite finished yet. Last weekend witnessed the next race in the series, the Mexican Grand Prix, and here Hamilton had blotted his copybook by crashing out in practice, which ensured that he would start the race itself from the very last place on the starting grid. From there, we witnessed one of his greatest fightbacks as he wove his way through the field to finish the race in fourth place, just outside the three winners' podium positions. It was a masterly blitzing drive, and being Lewis Hamilton, he took a few chances on the way, but just could not quite surpass the Ferrari of Kimi Raikkonen, who did finish third. The two red Ferraris dominated this race for the first time in a while, as former world champion Sebastian Vettel had overcome Hamilton's teammate Valtteri Bottas, who started the race in pole position right at the start. And apart from when he needed attention in the pits during the race, the German driver never surrendered the lead thereafter. Vettel must be wondering why he couldn't capture this level of composure earlier in the season when it really mattered. As for Bottas, he again demonstrated what a valuable sidekick to Hamilton he's been throughout the past year as he secured second place. Only one more race to go until the season finishes, and that'll be the Abu Dhabi race at the end of the month. I also mentioned last week the end-of-season ATP tennis finals at the O2 Arena in London, and we're approaching halfway through the initial group stage. The eight top men players this year are split into two groups of four. Each one plays the other three, then the top two in each group go forward into the semi-finals and the final. That's how it's supposed to work. However, Rafa Nadal lost his first match against David Goffin of Belgium, then retired from the tournament due to injury, being replaced by his Spanish compatriot Carreño Busta, who is due in action against the Austrian Dominic Thiem later today, Tuesday. The Spaniard was on standby as first reserve in case of a scenario like this. All eight players have completed one match, the early winners being Dimitrov and Goffin from the first group and Federer and Zverev from the second. By Tuesday, the second series of matches in the Federer group got going, and here the American Jack Sock prevailed after three sets against Marin Cilic of Croatia. It was a close-fought encounter, the American taking the match by 2-1 after a final set tiebreak. Sock had lost his first match against Roger Federer on Sunday, and he needed the victory to keep himself in with a chance in this tournament, whilst Cilic, after two losses, he was beaten by Zverev from Germany in his first match, seems certain to be on his way home. Tuesday evening would see what promised to be a thrilling encounter between Roger and Zverev, the German being perhaps the find of 2017 in tennis, but as each has already won their opening match, even defeat in this would not necessarily deprive them of the chance to make it through to the semi-finals. And of course, as you can imagine, I've been keeping a close eye on the cricket action as England's first test match of their current Australian tour rapidly rises over the horizon. It will get going on the 23rd, that's Thursday next week. Whenever we tour over there, the news from the England camp seems to be constantly about injuries. Half the squad seem to be laid up for one reason or another. The walking wounded, the half-crocked, managed a victory in their first serious match against a Cricket Australia 11 in Adelaide at the end of last week, although just how serious it really was against a team featuring no one close to being selected for the Aussie national team, I'm not sure. England had laboured to a first innings total of 293 at a rate of not much above 3 runs and over. Then our bowlers had a go when Wokes and Anderson spearheaded the attack. But our young leg spinner, Mason Crane, who you'd not expect to figure in the test side, but is fulfilling the spin bowling duties while another of the walking wounded, Muin Ali, recovers from his injury crisis, actually accounted for 3 of the Aussie batsmen. Our second innings was a bit of a disaster, only Stoneman and Bairstow emerging with any credit, but it didn't matter in the end when the Aussies' second innings crumbled to 75 all out. So, a win for our side, but not something to write home about given the status of the opposition. The next match, starting today in Townsville, is another four-day fixture against rather obscure opposition. Then it'll be on to the first test itself tomorrow week. But an honourable mention to the young ladies of England women's test squad, also in Australia at present. Their tour comprises a mix of four-day test matches and one-dayers, and in the final test they forged a draw with their backs to the wall. All out for 280 runs in their first innings, England faced the daunting prospect in the second innings of replying to an Australian total of 448 for 9 declared, and their only chance of saving the series being to hold out for a draw on the final day. That they did, although at the prospect of boring the pants off the spectators as they ground out a total of 202 for 6 on a tortoise-paced pitch. They're due to participate in the first of the 3 one-day internationals, supposedly on the same pitch in Sydney, on Friday. I don't think I'll be waiting up for news of that. So it's bye from the sports desk for this week. I'll be back next time. I hope you've enjoyed it today.